Jan Patočka is regarded as perhaps the greatest Czech philosopher of the 20th century. A new book makes several of his writings available in English for the first time, as Ian Willoughby has been finding out.
The Selected Writings of Jan Patočka, Care for the Soul, is the title of a collection of writings published recently by Bloomsbury in the UK. Most of the essays appear in English for the first time ever in the book, which is edited by Aaron Plunkett of the University of Hertfordshire and Ivan Chvatík, who was close to the philosopher and heads the Jan Patočka archive. The collection is translated by Alex Zucker. Patočka was a student of Husserl and Heidegger and worked in the field of phenomenology, a branch of philosophy focused on experience and consciousness. However, he is probably best known as one of the founders of the Charter 77 human rights movement in communist Czechoslovakia. By then 69 and in poor health, the philosopher died following grueling secret police interrogations soon after the Charter was published. In the new collection's introduction, Aaron Plunkett asks rhetorically, why Patočka and why now? Questions that I put to the academic herself.
For myself, the reason why Patočka is so appealing is his critique of instrumental reason. I think of him as kind of a philosopher of rupture and of uncertainty. I find Patočka quite helpful for thinking through a way of remaining open to uncertainty that both kind of affirms our need for things to ground us, for example, the community of other people, but in a way that doesn't just end up reaching back to the security of national identities or preconceived identities, but allows us to kind of forge new forms of identities, new forms of community that are more open. So that's what appeals to me most about Patočka. Other people, and one of the reasons that we were interested in doing this book now, is Patočka's reflections on Europe, the identity of Europe, what it means to carry out the project of Europe when, in a certain sense, that project has failed. And Patočka is very clear about that.
And he speaks about a future that would be post-European.
Indeed. And he's doing this quite early as well. So as early as the Second World War, maybe even in writings before that, he's already using this term post-Europe. And this shows up a lot in his work from the 60s and the 70s, especially his work on Plato in Europe and his work in the heretical essays, and some of the works that we translated for this volume. So post-Europe to him is a definitive statement that, you know, whatever this European ideal has been and whatever form it's taken, this form of European rationality is no longer viable. And that the project of kind of thinking of Europe as this narrative of constant progress, maybe from with its roots in ancient Greece, moving into the 20th century, that maybe it got knocked off course here and there, but essentially it's a coherent project. For him, this is deeply flawed, because if we don't look at the same time at the way in which a certain conception of rationality has led to two world wars, what he calls the 20th century of war, then we're failing to kind of see the full picture of what rationality has meant. So it's not just an accident that these things have occurred. It's sort of part of the flawed notion of instrumental rationality that's guided this European project, according to Patočka.
Patočka, of course, was working and living in a totalitarian state. He had himself lived through two world wars. How much do we get a sense of Patočka's experience of living under communism in his actual philosophy? I mean, is it palpable?
For me, it's so often something that's boiling right at the surface of his text. Now, he's a very technical philosopher in many ways. He writes very technical phenomenology, which relies on a lot of knowledge of Husserl and Heidegger and other thinkers within the history of philosophy. So in that sense, you could think of his philosophy as quite separate from the environment in which he found himself. But I think when you look at his concerns of living with a value of care for the soul in his philosophy means not only, well, it means a kind of cultivation of that element that can't be controlled and repressed from the outside, a cultivation of, we might say, spirit or the ability to live in relationship to truth that human beings are capable of. when you look at his emphasis on that and his insistence that whatever system you might be living in, whether it's liberalism, liberal democracy, or communism, he has plenty of criticisms for all of those systems insofar as they become complacent and kind of calcified and work against this capacity for human beings to transcend themselves and relate themselves to the truth in this open way.
Perhaps to look at this from another angle, he is, I guess, best known to the general public as the guy who helped draft Charter 77 and then who died after being interrogated by the secret police. To what degree could we say did his philosophy inform that engagement and the construction of the Charter 77 Declaration?
Scholars disagree about this, but I think the people that knew him best see the seeds of this political engagement in his philosophy itself. So even though you could see in some ways his philosophy as having these more esoteric elements to them, I think that his conviction that human life can't just be bare existence, it has to be life for the sake of something, I think this conviction did lead him to become involved. Certainly he was disillusioned by the events of 1968, by his dismissal prematurely from the university in 1972. And no doubt these events kind of led him in the direction of political involvement. Not that it was something inevitable from reading his philosophy, but I think there is a deep link there. And I think the fact that other dissidents found in Patochka's philosophy, despite not having technical backgrounds in philosophy, they found something to inspire them. And of course, he became this symbol of a kind of like martyr hero after the fashion of a Socrates, somebody who died for truth or in relationship to truth. So I think regardless of, you know, whether you think of Patochka as a sort of actual martyr or just someone that kind of happened to get caught up in this movement, there's no doubt his impact on the dissident movement and looking at figures like Havel, using so many of Patochka's ideas, I think it's clear that he had a really huge impact on the direction of the country. And I don't think that's an overstatement to say that his ideas contributed to eventually the fall of communism.
Ivan Kvatik, who's now 80, became a student of Patochka's when the philosopher impressed him as extraordinary in lectures in the late 1960s.
He was a very nice person. Of course, he had a sort of authoritative atmosphere, but he was very, very, very pleasant. He never read his lecture. He always developed his idea on the spot, regardless of if it was some lecture from the history of philosophy or something contemporary which he was just working on. So he always developed the thought, and it was quite apparent that he is really thinking when teaching.
The two became close, and when the philosopher was thrown out of the university in the early 1970s, Kvatik helped organize underground seminars for Patochka at apartments in Prague. He explains how.
We knew what is the situation with the secret police and what the communists can do and what they do not like. So we decided to organize these sessions quite secretly. We never used the telephone and so on. It started, I think, 1973 and went on. And it was very nice. Of course, we recorded all of that, and most of it has been already published in the collected works which I am organizing.
Was he angry or bitter about not being allowed to teach officially and having his career so badly affected by the communists?
Well, it's difficult to say so, because he knew this already from his whole life, in fact. And so he was used to it, and he understood that that it would end like that. It was even a miracle that he was allowed to teach until the middle of 1972. So in this respect, it was for him no problem. There was another problem for him. He was not quite, he was a little ill with his lungs, and he, in fact, wanted to write a lot of things. And in his letters, we are now publishing two, he all the time complains that he has no time and not energy enough for making all these things. But on the other hand, he made so many things that it is unbelievable.
After he died in 1977, how did you and other people work to keep his philosophy or his legacy alive?
Well, he was one of the first three spokespersons of Charter 77, so we must have finished our sessions in the end of December 76. But then after New Year, the charter was published, and the police was furious, so we couldn't meet again. I just met him once at the main post office when he was filling in the papers following the open letter to the general procurator concerning the charter, and it was sent to a lot of other places. So I helped him filling in these papers, and it was the last time I saw him. So when he died in the hospital, it was Sunday. I learned it from the Radio Free Europe or Voice of America, I don't remember, at about noon. So I decided immediately to go home to Prague. Well, because in Prague you couldn't hear the radio, so outside in the cottage it was possible. So we immediately went home, and with three other friends, one of them had a car. We went in the evening to the flat of Patočka's daughter, and with the help of her husband, Jan Sokol, we went to Patočka's flat. He was living in the villa of father of Jan Sokol. And we packed all the manuscripts and important things and took it away. Because we decided that police is lazy and they would get their orders only on Monday morning.
What did you do with all of these materials?
Well, first we kept it in secret and sorted it in a way, because in that evening we just had to take it all on the heap and take away. And so we sorted it, and then I started to organize a sort of, we now call it archive, collection of Patočka's texts. And we published, in fact, 27 volumes in Samizdat, made by the typewriter. But of course there was a lot of things which were not published at all. And so very soon I succeeded to get an acquaintance with the director of the copying department of the Ministry of Finance. And it was functioning perfectly for many years until the end of 89. And we made heaps of copies every week, so much that what I could carry in two big bags.
It's sometimes said that the dissident turned president Václav Havel drew inspiration from Patočka's philosophy, particularly the concept of living in truth, with which Havel was closely associated. Kvatík says the reality was a little more complicated.
Generally speaking, it is true, but in detail, he didn't meet Patočka very often, and because first he was most of the time in jail, and of course he knew Patočka already before from his activity in the theater Na Zábradlí, because Patočka was making there sort of seminars after the performances in the night. In fact, the the connecting device, or how to call it, between Patočka and Havel was Jiří Němec. Perhaps you know the name. It was, in fact, the man who is not very well known until now, and he in fact was the inventor of Charter 77, the soul of the whole project. And it was a philosopher, and he knew Patočka a long time before, and he was in a regular contact with Václav Havel, so it was transferred in this way.
Patočka is regularly referred to as one of the greatest Czech philosophers of the last century. But how well known are his ideas beyond his native country? Erin Plunkett says it depends on which parts of the world one is talking about.
I'd say he has a much stronger reputation in Europe than he does in the Anglophone world. So, for example, his writings have been available in French and German for some time. I mean, much, much more of his writings have been available in those languages. Paul Ricoeur was the philosopher who wrote the article announcing Patočka's death and kind of painting him as this philosopher of the resistance. So from the very beginning, the very end of Patočka's life, he had this influence on French philosophy. And you see him in Derrida, that's where I encounter Patočka for the first time. He hasn't had as much influence on the Anglophone world, and that's part of the reason why we wanted to produce this book of new translations. I think one area where he's starting to become more relevant is in political philosophy. So he was influenced by Hannah Arendt's writings, and you can see although he doesn't have a political philosophy per se, he picks up a lot of the same themes as Arendt about the importance of kind of non-instrumental thinking as a counter to purely kind of utilitarian conception of life. And this is starting to inform some discussions of like what politics is, especially in the discussion of what we want Europe to be if we no longer have this coherent, you know, unified project of Europe available to us. What is Europe going to look like? So there are a lot of political philosophers, Italian and English, who are looking at Patočka now and trying to glean some of these themes from him.